Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Uncover a world of sensuality and pleasure with New Zealand's pioneering sex toy purveyors. Whether you seek excitement that leaves you wet, loud, or speechless, we have something for your every desire. Explore the world's best brands at your fingertips. Peachesandcream.co.nz, R18. Welcome to Finger Food, empowered by Peaches and Cream. I'm your maitre d', Stacey O, intimacy and relationship coach and culinary artist, and I'm bringing sex to the dinner table. On the menu is a selection of heart-to-hearts with people who vulnerably share their stories, insights, and perspectives. This podcast is about sex and so much more. We explore connection, letting go of judgment, and accepting ourselves exactly as we are. Let's dine. In this episode, I chat to Joe Damon. Joe is one of Aotearoa's most exciting young comedians. Having starred in Have You Been Paying Attention and Celebrity Treasure Island, selling out the Sky City Theatre twice and growing an online audience of over 140,000 followers, he's no stranger to being in the spotlight. Since then, he's co-written Comedy Central's first ever Polynesian comedian series, Sis, and followed that up with his own series, Bouncers, which he created, wrote, directed, and starred in for Comedy Central UK. Joe is an advocate for men's mental health. He's worked alongside the country's largest mental health organisations, including raising $15,000 for Movember through his work on Celebrity Treasure Island. In this episode, Joe and I sit down over a bowl of Chinese noodles and discuss what straight men actually want. We discuss toxic masculinity, the importance of communication and aftercare in relationships, Joe's journey with both psychotherapy and sex therapy, and so much more. It's great to have you here at the table. Let's get started.
Oh my goodness, this. This looks amazing.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
The smell is amazing. I really just want to start eating it.
You can start eating it.
But no, thank you so much for having me.
Oh my God, it's such a pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
Really, truly. It's so funny when Chris was like, we need the insight of the straight man. He was like, you've only got gays and gals on your podcast. I was like, we really do need a straight man, but I don't know who the right straight man is.
That's so funny. Because that was the same reason they got me on Porn Revolution was... For that purpose.
You stand for all the straight men.
Yeah, and I remember just being like, dang, that's a big group, Chrissy. I don't know if I speak for many, but I'm sure I speak for a few. But yeah, it's interesting because my perspective, just for anything, and then I guess for this kind of conversation, it's also steeped in, obviously, because I'm Māori and Fijian, so there's a lot of Māori and Polynesian culture that's included in there. Yeah, so I guess there's a whole bunch of things that I kind of come to when it comes to a lot of the stuff that I talk about.
Yeah, cool. With this. Amazing. I can't wait to hear about it.
Yeah, me too, because I'm also going to be making it up on the spot.
Perfect. That's what we want.
There's a lot of that.
It's an intuitive podcast. We could go anywhere. Okay, so I asked you, Joe, what's your favourite food? And your response was?
My response was some version of Chinese fried noodles or something along those lines.
That was it.
I think was what I said. But I saw your message before I read the email. And then I read the email saying that you're going to make whatever I say. So then immediately felt bad about that. So I messaged you back and said, I actually like cheese and crackers.
And I thought, you want Chinese noodles, yeah, and you feel bad about it.
I can't remember the last time I ate cheese and crackers, to be honest.
No, it's not right. Your dish is Chinese Ho Fun thick chicken noodles. And I messaged my Chinese bestie and I said, what is the most gangster Chinese noodle dish that I can create for you? And she said, this is the one. It's the flat Chinese noodles. So this is it.
And the way you thin the chicken, like what is...
Okay, so how they do it, I followed a recipe from the very best, but the ticket is it's got corn flour in it, it's got Chinese wine in it, it's got dark soy sauce, it's got light soy sauce, it's got salt, it's got a number of different things, and then you marinate it for like 3 hours. And so then when you fry the chicken, it's kind of crunchy but sticky but sweet.
I feel you.
And then I've got bok choy in here from my parents' garden and noodles, and then you just smush it all together with like a delicious marinade.
10 out of 10 stars.
Thank you.
I'm a good judge. I eat a lot of this shit. But...
Nice.
Because I grew up in Asia.
Mm.
So I moved to Malaysia when I was 5.
Oh my God, wow.
And then, lived there for 3 or 4 years. And then lived in India afterwards.
Wow.
So that's where that comes from, my love for that. Because I, you know, grew up eating it and I feel like I'm back, mate.
Oh my God, yes.
Yeah, you killed this.
That is music to my ears.
That recipe must have been great.
That is fucking... It's all in the recipe. And then where did you live after Malaysia and India? When did you come to New Zealand?
So we were back and forth. Then I moved back to New Zealand permanently when I was about 10, 11. And I basically repeated my last year of primary school.
Yeah.
So I did my last year of primary school already overseas, but then came back and had to do it again.
Mm.
And then, yeah, intermediate in Auckland. And then moved to Wellington for high school.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Wellington's where I'm from originally. And then, yeah, moved back there for high school at the age of, like, 13. Was there till I was 18. And then, yeah, moved back to Auckland for university. So I actually only realized this the other day. Auckland's been the longest I've stayed in one place.
Oh, wow.
Pretty much my whole life. From the time I moved here when I was 18 to...
To now.
Yeah, 27 now, so...
You're 27 now?
Yeah.
Whoa.
So turning 28, so it's going to be 10 years, which is crazy to think about.
Yeah. How does that feel to be in one place for that long? Do you have itchy feet?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm.
I'm out of here in some sense, one way or another, at some point over the next few months. But it's less of an itchy feet thing. What was weird was I really started to enjoy Auckland probably last year.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, like, fell in love with the place.
Yeah.
If I'm lucky enough to have kids one day, I would love to raise my kids in Auckland. So it's by no means like a running away from a place I don't love. It's just more, there's a lot of things that I think I'm ready to do in my life and I've got to go do those in other places. But the plan is always to come back here and settle down. I don't think that'll be for a while, but it will be at some point.
Yeah.
But I love Auckland. Do you love Auckland?
I love elements of Auckland.
Elements of it.
Yeah. I grew up here as well.
What part are you from?
All over. So my dad was in property, so we just moved wherever the buildings were, basically. Ooh. So I was born in Mount Eden, and then I moved to Ellerslie, then I moved to Onehunga, then I moved to Glendowie, now they live in Karaka, like just all over.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do you consider yourself from?
I've always... gone to school, well, actually I went to Barrowdene, but then I went to Auckland Girls Grammar. All my friends have always been in Central.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like
Central,
way more connected to Central than anywhere. But I would say the place that I spent the most time was Ellerslie. So like the Ellerslie race course was like my childhood upbringing.
It's such a sick area too. Because that Ellerslie has always struck me as, and I don't know geographically if this is correct.
Yes.
But I've always thought of Ellerslie as the centre of Auckland.
It kind of is.
Yeah, because you go down the road and Onehunga I've always considered kind of the start of South. People are going to hate that I've said that, but I've always considered it the start of the South. Yes. And then you go another 5 minutes up the road and then you're in CBD. The motorway, you know, that roundabout, I've always seen it as you can go anywhere in Auckland from here. It's the connection to out east. You got to go that way if you want to go to east. So
yeah.
That's such a sick
So
place.
I am central through and through.
I love
the heart of Ellerslie.
I love that.
Okay, let's get into the nitty gritty.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm ready.
Okay, first things first, how I first learned about you. I was watching Alice Sneddon's Bad News.
Oh, wow.
And it was the toxic masculinity episode. And she interviewed you within that about rugby culture and the toxicity of it. And I was like, who is this guy? This guy's crack up.
Appreciate it.
That was kind of it. And then have been following you. And then Chris came over for his podcast and he was like, we need to get the inside scoop of the straight man.
That's so funny. That's so funny.
We absolutely need it. But like, who is the man?
Yeah.
Who is it? And you were it, my friend.
I take it as a massive compliment. I mean, what I found real... Also, thank you, by the way, for saying everything you're saying about watching it. I was shocked by it. Like, I love Sneds, and I have a particularly close relationship with her because she actually gave me my first job in TV.
Oh, amazing.
So, yes, I've always held Alice in quite a certain place in my life. So it was a weird full circle moment for her to bring me onto the show and have that whole convo around rugby culture and stuff because I grew up quite entrenched in it. But I do actually take it as a massive compliment because I know in a lot of these spaces, whether it's toxic masculinity or just masculinity in general, they are highlighted as these things that for lack of a better way to put it, they have contributed to a lot of negative experiences to the people that are in these spaces. And I guess I've been invited in as a clearly masculine dude myself, invited in as like a mouthpiece into a lot of these people's spaces.
Yeah.
And I take that as a compliment because clearly they see me as somebody that's, they feel safe to have that kind of conversation.
Totally.
So I really have always appreciated Alice for having me on that and Chris for having me on his show and for you having me here. Aww. Genuinely, so.
Yeah, it is. That's the thing, isn't it? Because I was thinking, like, you know, who is that? It's so funny because I haven't actually consciously done this, but I've only had gals and gays on the show so far, apart from my ex-husband and one other guy, this guy Beku, who's a bit more pansexual.
Yeah, got you.
And... it wasn't a conscious decision.
Of course not. Yeah.
It was more just, oh, who would be interesting to talk to? And unconsciously, who would I feel safe to talk to?
Of course.
Damn. Anyway, thank you for coming on.
Maybe some of the boys will relate to what I say. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there'll be plenty that won't, but
yeah.
I just always just speak from my personal experience and I'm always pretty open about it as much as I can be.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Stunning. Okay, so on that, what do straight men want? In the realms of sex, love, and relating.
In the realm of sex, love, and relating.
It's a big question.
Yeah. It's a funny one because the reason this question is a big one, I guess, for me is I'm in the middle of a bit of a renaissance when it comes to a bit of a changeover, transition from what my relationship with it used to be to what it is now. So, like I said, I was born into a pretty... So my rugby family is quite a well-respected rugby family and I've got a lot of cousins that play professional rugby and stuff and that used to be the coolest thing to say when I was younger and it's something now that I joke around about because it's a little bit embarrassing because I don't think it's as cool anymore. very masculine family, I guess you could say. Dad's got four older brothers and I've got two younger brothers. I've got one older sister, but two younger brothers. And also we're from a pretty small town called Wainui, which is in Lower Hutt, just outside of Wellie. So it's a pretty tough town for sure. And the way I was kind of brought up was, and I would say a lot of men are brought up, especially with the kind of father that I had, which, again, I think a lot of Kiwi dads fall into this.
Yeah.
You know, we're not brought up where conversation with our dad, who's usually our first kind of male figure in our life that plays a pretty big part. We're not grown up to have big, deep, wide-ranging conversations with them because our dads don't usually communicate in that way, especially communicating vulnerability and stuff. They communicate it through... like my dad did, through productivity. So it's a thing that my siblings and I joke about. My dad never said, I love you, but he worked his ass off. We would almost never see him because he was working so much. And that was something that I just came to understand as I got older, that that's how my dad says he loves me.
I love you, yeah.
And so you build a pretty interesting relationship with productivity, and then what you then build a pretty interesting relationship with is value and value onto yourself. And I did that. My brothers did that. I went to an all-boys school. That was a school that bellied this whole concept that if you as a man want to be valuable to the people around you, you're of no value if you're saying what's valuable about you. You've got to do it. You've got to be seen doing this. You've got to be seen as valuable to your community, to the people around you. And how this translates into your intimate life and your sex life is that exact same thing. If I want to be seen as valuable to the opposite sex, if I want to be seen as valuable to women, what are the things that I as a man, as a straight man in my head from my one perspective, think that women are going to find valuable? And when you're young, that's a hard thing because you're not talking to women about that. You're taking in what you're seeing online, what you're seeing in movies, what you think women are desiring. And so because of that, you're building an identity around engaging with this group without even knowing if that's actually what they want. And so for me, a big one was like in Wellington in particular, and in high school, like rugby culture is massive and First 15 is huge. It's a thing that I've mentioned before is that the Wellington Lions is the professional rugby team back home, but you're more famous if you're a First 15 player in Wellington than you are if you're a Lions player.
Wow.
Which sounds ridiculous, but it's really true. And so if you think about what that whole culture brings in, but when you're a young man and you're brought up to believe that that's the most desirable I can be, that's how I can be most valuable to my community. The one thing that my dad taught me to be valuable to my community, if that's the way I got to do it, then I've got to embrace everything that that culture brings. And so from a young age, that was what I took on. And I guess where talk about that transition coming through is actually learning the other side of things through conversation and through experience. And I know there's a lot of young men that haven't started that or at the beginning of that. So that's the longest way I could have answered your question.
I love that answer. I really, really love that. And it is, as you're saying, and my dad's very similar. He's Irish Catholic.
Damn.
So different upbringing.
They worked hard.
But very much rugby culture. Yeah. Don't show any vulnerability. Nah. He had eight brothers, one sister, not much money.
Well.
It was like fight to survive kind of mentality, and rugby culture was everything to him. And that piece around how can you show value to your community and then bringing in everything that comes with that, the good and the bad qualities of it. There is so much beauty in that way of being brought up. There's also this, as you say, toxic masculinity that comes through.
Totally. Because the biggest problem with it is you're creating a version of yourself that you believe is desirable to another group without actually engaging with them. And so it's really just a lot of guesses. You're just going in blind. And as you start to learn, as I learned, as I got older, 90% of the things that you were doing that you thought you thought were having an effect were like, literally, not only were they not having an effect, it was the complete opposite of what.
They wrong.
It was the complete opposite. And then I was like, oh, damn, like that doesn't. You guys don't like that shit.
And that's the thing. It's so interesting, isn't it? It's based on all these things that you're seeing in society. Whereas if you just stopped and, as you say, like, you guys don't like that? Like asking the question, communicating, what do you want?
I'll tell you something that's real silly, but it's something that I found out only like a couple of years ago. So I was pretty old to be finding this out. So for example, if I think of a version of what I was talking about with who is presented to me as men that are the highest value to their community in a basic way. Superheroes, you know, the Avengers and stuff. It's very easy to look at those guys and be like, oh yeah, that's what everyone wants.
Hot.
Yeah. And then it was so funny. I saw a picture of, it was like a meme or something that one of my best mates had posted. And the picture was, men think I want this. And it was a picture of Chris Hemsworth. And like, you know, he's all ripped up and looks like Thor. And in my head, I'm like, yo, he's, that dude is sexy, man. All women must want that. And then the other one was just a picture of just a random dude, like pretty big belly, hairy.
Yeah.
And he's just like eating. It, to be honest, it looked like me. Like, it looked like me. Big belly, hairy, eating a hamburger. And then it was like, men think we want this, but we want this. And then I was messaging her. I was like, nah, you're taking the piss. And she's like, no, I'm serious. Like, we don't like that shit. And then I was, and then I go to her. I was like, well, why do we all go to the gym and train and shit then if you don't even like it? And she's like, we don't know either. And I was like, dang, that's such a good point. We didn't even ask.
It's so interesting as well, because I feel like we as women have also, well, myself as a woman, have also grown up in that culture.
Yeah.
So at the same time as we want sensitivity and we want to be heard and we want all these beautiful, like, feminine traits to be weaved through our men, I'm totally speaking so generally right now, just FYI, this is what I want. I have noticed within previous relationships how I have emasculated for certain things. And I am so guilty of that throughout ex-partnerships. And it's only now that I'm becoming more aware of my behavior that I'm like, oh, I did emasculate. And it is through those superhero movies, being
so
the creme de la creme or quote unquote, creme de la creme. And and it takes a lot of unpicking from all sides, I would say.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point too, because then it comes down to it is two sides not engaging. And just as much as we haven't asked the question, obviously because we've never asked the question, there's probably a massive amount of women that, because they've never been asked, they've never known the answer. So they've never been able to actually express that. And that's just one thing that I've found as I've gotten older, got rid of a lot of cloudiness within relationships that was there whenever I was navigating them when I was younger. It's going to sound so stupid and like so simple, but just really asking about preference and being really open to that conversation. Because
yeah.
like I know, especially in New Zealand, we take being direct about what we want as conflict. We have this weird culture where even if we just say something very simple, like say I brought you a hot chocolate
yes.
and it had dairy milk in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went, oh, I don't drink dairy. The Kiwi way would everyone in the room would be like, oh, difficult. You know what I mean? Yes. We would be like that.
Totally.
But you're just expressing a very simple need for yourself.
Yes.
And so that's the thing that makes me laugh is that in even the most simple of needs, we have this weird relationship with expressing, with our ability to express that need.
Oh.
And so if we can't do it for even the simple things, how hard is it going to be for us to express the most complex, vulnerable, like difficult ones for us to
totally
to express? And that's where you get into this really cloudy area for both sides where we aren't able to figure out what each other want. And so for me, it's been a case of figuring out a way to make it really easy to talk about these things. And I find me just being really open about what mine are and almost like using humor to make it easy. That's at the very least, it's made it easy to start trying to talk about it. Yeah.
I love that. I really love what you're saying there. The simplest thing of asking for like dairy milk. And
not that we'd all talk shit, you know, if you ask for oat milk. It's just the, you know.
It is that thing of like, oh, you don't want to ask because you're going to be difficult.
Totally.
Or it's like, you know, societally become, it's like you're difficult if you're asking for what you want.
It's like, so weird that we're like that, hey?
Yeah. So weird, but then it's so attractive when someone really states their needs. And
it really is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that because I started going to America October last year pretty regularly and seeing how direct they are. And I think what makes it really organic is they're really direct, but to the point where it's not even really a thing. So I've been trying to figure out how to incorporate that. So me trying to be direct and laying out boundaries and stuff, that's only been a journey I've been on since literally October, because I've started to see how people do it in ways where it doesn't make anyone feel awkward because they're in a whole culture that does it. But I just started to incorporate a lot of the stuff I was learning over there back here. And that's the only reason I've been able to start on that. So I'm still real early on it, but it has really started to change a lot of things in my life, which has been crazy.
And how has it been received?
Weirdly great.
Yeah.
Kiwis, we're great with boundaries. We're great with receiving them, which I think when we really understand how to give them, because we kind of lead with this thing where we don't want to stand on toes. We're all constantly walking on eggshells around each other.
Mm.
But what's so funny is you think of any time someone expresses that to you, we're the first to be like, oh, okay, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. So it's understanding how it's going to be received and really thinking about that, thinking about how we would receive said boundaries should make it easier for us to communicate those.
Yeah.
Because New Zealand, we actually have a great culture of receiving boundaries to the point where we probably overcompensate anytime people do really lay them out clearly.
Can you give me an example of, in a relating sense, a boundary that you've implemented recently?
Yeah, for sure. Mm. So one thing that I used to really do was I used to make a really big mistake on trying to be friends with everybody that I worked with and getting almost too personal with them. Because one thing with me is I would almost dull myself down and make fun of myself because I go into a lot of spaces where there's people that recognize me or people that know me or people that have seen me do certain things. So I would dull myself down in order to make everyone else feel comfortable. But then what was happening was I was starting to do it so much that people then thought, oh, it's okay to make fun of Joe, or it's okay to like talk shit about you. So you're making fun of yourself, so it must be cool for me to make fun of you too. And I wouldn't correct it, even though it was something that, because I'm quite sensitive, that would affect me every single time, but I would just let it slide because in my head I'm like, no, I've got to make everyone else comfortable.
Mm.
And not only am I not letting that slide, I don't even put myself down around other people anymore. And that's almost me setting a boundary of I'm just a normal dude, and me playing myself down, at least in my head, I feel like I'm almost treating myself abnormally. Whereas if I just walk into the space and I'm just, we're equally all welcome here, then there's no reason for me to dull myself down too much, because I'm not expecting anyone else to do that for themselves.
Yes.
And it's a really hard one to get over, because I think I had programmed for a long time in my head that if I'm not dulling myself down, then I'm arrogant or I'm a dickhead. But what's been really interesting is it's just made things a lot easier for me, and a lot of the relationships that I'm building now professionally and personally, they just feel a lot smoother because I'm not going out of my way to do that anymore. So that is an example of one boundary that I'm really setting.
I love that. That's beautiful.
Thanks, Liz.
Yeah, I really love that. And what about in your life right now? Are you in a relationship? Are you single? What's your status?
Yeah, so currently seeing someone, and we, yeah, so it's complicated. I think she wouldn't be offended if I said it's complicated, especially with circumstances and stuff. I think it's hard for us to commit fully to something.
To you going away.
Yeah, with me going away and traveling so much and not really knowing what's going to be happening with my life. And also to her, she's super busy as well and has a lot of things going on in her life. So in respect to her, I still acknowledge that, yeah, we're seeing each other, but then essentially, yeah, we're still in this place where we're like, we don't really know what we are doing. But the one thing that I'm glad for is that I've made it really clear from pretty much as long as we've known each other, because we've known each other for ages.
Have you been dating for ages or?
Yeah, like on and off. Yeah, on and off. So we first met 4 years ago.
On and off for 4 years.
Yeah. So it was it was actually pretty platonic at the start. We were just, we were just mates. There was nothing super intense.
Yeah.
And then I actually was in a relationship for a year, which was really good. And then we broke up like July.
You were in a relationship with another person for a year?
Another girl who I actually grew up with. So yeah, we've known each other since we were 15. And then yeah, we were together for about a year. And that was an awesome relationship. And it actually ended about as well as a relationship can, to be honest. And a big reason for our breakup was circumstantial again. And then we just, the girl I'm seeing now, we just kind of linked back up. And again, it was platonic for probably like 6 months. Yeah, we were just catching up as friends and stuff. And then somewhere it escalated, funnily enough. And we haven't really tried to stop it or anything. We just sort of let it happen, which has been really nice. But then at the same time, it has been that thing that I've been conscious of, and she has too, of we don't really know where my life's going. So I don't want to throw her out, but I just as much don't want to throw myself out into something before I really know what I'm doing. Yeah, I hate the thing of when someone just says that they're purely doing it for someone else. I'm definitely doing it for myself in the sense of not overcommitting before I'm really sure of what I'm doing.
I think that's admirable, and I think that's a good way to approach it. And also the fact that you're communicating that throughout and sharing
for
that
sure.
And that that's the conversation that you're having and that you're comfortable in that is beautiful.
And I think a big thing that I am constantly trying to get across is I think it is more for myself of that knowing, because I am probably in the biggest stage of not really knowing what's happening with my life than I think I've ever been. And personally, I actually feel great and I'm fine with it. But that's because I know myself and know where I want to go and know the ins and outs of the situation, what could and couldn't happen. It's a big ask to then bring someone else into that and then just say, yeah, just trust me. So yeah, that's where I'm at with that.
Beautiful. Love that. And what about in that in-between patch when you broke up with your ex of a year and then you were starting to see your current? Did you date in that time? Have you like dated at all throughout this last 4 years? And
heaps.
What has the dating life been like for you? And you know, I know you've been traveling a lot. What's the difference between dating in New Zealand and dating overseas?
That's so funny. No, I've dated I've dated a lot.
And also, how have you dated? Like, where do the dates come from?
It's really funny. This is such a good question. So around 2020 was where I stepped into this new part of my life, where I stepped into the public eye for the first time. And I guess my relationship with dating changed quite a bit then. And even though it is just New Zealand and being in the public eye is relatively smaller scale to overseas, it definitely is a change. And I'd be lying if I said it wasn't.
Yeah, this is so interesting. So
it changed a lot. To be honest, for me, I've always been pretty lucky that I've always been, for lack of a better word, popular all through high school and stuff.
Just
say that out. Because I was going to say desirable, and I was like, nah, that I don't know if I like that word. I'll say popular.
Say popular, say desirable. It's all welcome.
Thank you. All through high school and through university, I never really had a time in my life where I didn't feel like women were really attracted to me, to be honest. And for me, it's also been a case of figuring out why the hell that even is, because I think when I was younger, pretty much up until like my mid to early 20s, even as late as I would say 25, it was always actually something that was quite confusing for me, because I was like, I don't really know why women seem to like me for whatever reason. Again, because my reference point was I would look at guys that to me looked desirable or were desirable, and I didn't look anything like those dudes. Or I didn't do what they did. It's so funny. This is a completely like random story. I'm just going to put it in there. One of my best mates,
Yeah.
And he does not know this at all. So he'll laugh when he hears this. One of my best mates is a guy named Wyatt, and we've known each other almost 10 years now. Mm. I still remember the first time I met him, and he's pretty tall. He was a swimmer, so he's obviously shredded as, and he's the Pākehā dude. So he walked in, and I remember seeing him, and all of us boys were getting together for the races, and we were obviously going to go meet up with a massive girls group that we were friends with. And I remember him walking in, and before then, I'd felt real skunks, and I felt like, yeah, I'm all dressed up, and my race is out for, yeah, I feel like I look mean. And I remember him walking in, and genuinely my confidence, like, shot down. Because I looked at him, and I was like, oh, no, that's the dude that girls want. Which is true, like my guy's he's the guy for a lot of people, but that was such a poignant moment for me, and I think I was like 18 at the time, so still very young in my journey on all of this. But it was always a confusing thing for me, because I would see guys like that, and then I would then see how women were around me, and I'd be confused as to, like, damn, I wonder where this is coming from. So that was always a constant through my life.
Yeah.
But then 2028 just kind of hit times 1,000, really. And you're getting inundated with
DMs.
Yeah. And getting approached in person. And I would be with my ex, and we would be very clearly together out at dinner or something.
Mm.
Just get hit up by the waitress.
Oh my God.
I'll tell you another funny story. I was shopping with my mum at a Hallensteins, and the girl working the counter was hitting on me so hard that my mum was, and my mum's like Fijian. She's like a pretty strong brown mum.
Yeah.
And so she doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
The girl was hitting on me so hard, she was like, are you done? To the girl.
Oh my God.
And I was whispering to her, I was like, mum, be nice. And she's like, no, I've got places to be. I don't want to watch this girl trying to get with my son.
Oh my God.
And I was like, mum, man.
You just
ruined it. But yeah, that kind of became a thing after 2020. So that was like a whole nother part of it, I guess, to navigate in my life.
Wow.
And dating was already a pretty complicated thing for me, as it is anyone.
Yeah.
So to add that whole part to it was a trip and a half for sure.
So I guess you've never online dated or...
I had a little bit beforehand.
Yeah.
But nah, not so much. And I dabbled in it after I actually broke up with my last ex. I was like, I'm just going to give it a go. And I gave it a go for like a week or so.
Mm.
And every message is either, is this a catfish? Or it was...
Are you the real Joe Damon?
Yeah, it was stuff like that. Or it was like really keen. Or it was like starting off with making fun of me.
Oh, so gross.
It was literally like, it's one of those three. So that was like a whole nother thing to sort of experience. So yeah, I did it for like 2 weeks, and then it wasn't really working for me, but... Yeah, that's kind of been where things went to over the last few years.
Yes. Sure. Okay. So I'm interested in those early kind of dating stages that you had with people.
Yeah.
Because I'm single currently, divorcee.
Oh, yeah.
And I have recently had an experience. I have had multiple experiences, but I've basically gone to multiple schools and have been studying intimacy and relationships since I separated from my partner. So I do intimacy and relationship coaching with women specifically. But there's been a lot of communication stuff that I've been learning of, like, actually how to state your needs and how to state your boundaries in a world where it feels like it's not welcome or whatever. Right. So I would say I'm like overly communicative a lot of the time. And I'm curious, have you ever met that with anyone? Like when you've gone on a date and they've been like super communicative, and if so, how has that been received?
That is such a good question, Stace. Because if I really think about it now, well, that's really interesting. If I really think about it now, I would say, so I've always dated a woman older than me.
Yes, okay.
And quite like a bit older than me. So yeah around when I broke through, or just before then, I was about 23, 24, and I was dating my ex then was 39.
Yeah.
So I was always dating older women. So I guess where I'm going with this is before then, I would get even early on dates, definitely a lot of over-communication, definitely a lot of really, I guess, happy to talk about like a lot of different things.
Yeah.
Afterwards. And yeah, I would say... definitely after I broke up with my ex, so after 2020, and then, obviously the most recent time that I've been single, less of that, more just seeing what I do. And that was something that I had to actually recognize quite quickly, because then you start getting into conversations like balance of power, like power dynamic, I guess, and it's more of a, okay, do you feel like you can't say anything? Because, and so even that's like a weird thing to think about.
Yes.
You know?
Totally. Like, are you just trying to say the things that you're saying to impress me or?
Yeah, yeah. And it was less the...
Or just asking you more about your life and less...
Yeah.
Like the... equality between.
Yeah. And what was really interesting was, for me, I guess, because I didn't recognize it at the start. And it's almost a thing of, you know, when you don't recognize it, you just think, oh, okay, this person just wants to do everything I want to do. This is cool. She's just chilling, like, just having a good time. Yeah, cool. That's sweet. And then it was, it took me to then realize, like, a bit of a pattern. That I was then like, okay, this is actually something I need to be conscious of and aware of, because I can see how this just teeters along without her really telling me anything that she kind of needs or is looking for. And because I'm just going about my day just doing what I feel like. So that was actually like a really interesting thing to start thinking about when it came to a lot of these dynamics in dating. And it's only tenfold, I guess, the more they know who I was before we met. Yeah, so it was never anything that I ever thought I'd have to navigate in my life. But yeah, it's a thing that I was still figuring out, because that not only plays itself in dating, but plays itself in every part of my life, you know, in work and in a professional environment. So yeah, it's a weird thing to think about.
It is a weird thing to think about. And I also think there's this element of being communicative and meeting someone where they are and having mutual interests, or just meeting someone and being like as interested in them as they are in you, and having that beautiful dynamic.
For sure.
But also this, I don't know, I've been playing with recently, because of all the things that I've learned, I'm like, okay, I could actually weave in a little bit more mystery. And I wonder around how much is too much communication and how much mystery do you want?
What's an example of maybe a time where you would be more communicative, but you went to mystery instead? And what is like...
good question.
What is mystery to you? I would love to hear that example.
Yeah, so I would say mystery being like not giving all of yourself away too soon. So an example would be, I have like a communication sexy tool that I use when I'm going to be intimate with someone, which is called BDSMA. And it's quite amazing. I've used it with multiple people. I learned it at this sex school that I went to. Basically, it's R stands for relationships, B stands for boundaries, D stands for desires, S stands for sexual health, M stands for meaning, and A stands for aftercare. So you can kind of weave them through whatever. You don't have to do the whole thing. You could just literally ask someone, are you seeing anyone else at the moment? Yeah, like when you're first dating someone, you have no idea what their status is. And imagine dating someone and then not having that conversation and then seeing them out on another date with someone and being shocked by it, as opposed to being like, yeah, I'm dating other people, and just being honest and open about that from the beginning. Or imagine if you're dating a married man, but you've never had that conversation, so you don't actually know.
And they're banking on you not asking.
Exactly.
They're happy that you've never brought that up.
Exactly. So then R, so that's R, and then B is boundary. So if you're about to be intimate with someone, like, okay, my boundary is I don't actually want to have penetrative sex with you, but I'm happy to hook up and explore. I want to keep my clothes on, or whatever your boundaries are. And then D, desires, like, I really desire you to kiss every inch of my body. And so it's kind of like a foreplay tool in a sense, but it creates safety within the dynamic. Because so often I think we're in these intimate situations and we're just going at it, but you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, and it's just
he's thinking or she's thinking.
You're
or
both like, just flinging shit at a wall. Just hoping so, that it's all good.
Exactly. So, like, let's talk
about
that.
That's such a good way to do it.
Like, yeah. It's created way more depth in a lot of my relationships. So S is sexual health. When was the last time you got checked? I've been checked since the last person I had sex with. Whatever.
Yeah.
That's out of the way. And then M is meaning. So meaning is actually quite vulnerable, because you'd be like, every time I have sex with someone, I tend to catch feelings, or this is just no strings attached, like whatever it is to you.
I really like that.
And so then it's like out in the open, like, you're not thinking, oh my God, this is the love of my life. Or you're not thinking they're going to want more from me from this dynamic, because they know it's no strings attached. Yeah. It's just really like,
that's so interesting.
Clear.
You know what's funny is that listening to you talk about, how many letters is that? Is that five?
R, B, D, S, M is five. And then A is aftercare, really important.
Yes. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one.
No, you go though. We'll talk about
aftercare. Well, no, what I was going to say was, when you were saying that, I thought about all the instances where I've done, and I'm being completely honest.
Yeah.
I think I've only ever really done like one or two of those, like spoken about them.
Yes.
At least at depth. And then, you know, you sprinkle in another one or two, just kind of lackadaisically.
Yes.
But I think about every instance where I did talk about at least one of them.
Yes.
And it was mean.
So mean.
Because you feel like you've just broken the ice in like another way.
Totally.
And that always makes things better. That's such an interesting way to
Yeah.
Think about it. But yes, aftercare. So,
totally. That's the thing. It's like when you do actually have those conversations and you do actually bring things up that seem to be a little bit scary or vulnerable, it always...
It's pretty mean enough.
Yeah. And it's if it's received, like it's like can bring the connection way deeper and you'll instantly feel safer with that person, which means you instantly feel like more desire towards them.
Yeah. So it's pretty good afterwards.
Yeah. Fucking A. And then aftercare is like, do you want to receive a text from that person the next day? Do you want them to cook you breakfast? Do you want a cuddle after sex or whatever it is? It's like stating your needs, because oftentimes I know amongst my girlfriends it's like, oh, he didn't fucking text me the next day, what an asshole. And it's like, did you ask for that? And maybe if you asked for it and then your need wasn't met, and then that's a good indication to be like, okay, well, that's not the person for me. But if you haven't expressed, it's like we're all relating in so many different shapes and forms.
Yeah.
How are we to know what the other person wants?
And this kind of goes full circle for me. So my ex, we broke up last year. I think I was 26, turning 27.
Yeah.
I only learned what aftercare was in our relationship.
Yes.
Just being completely honest. I did not know that it was a thing.
No, no one does really.
Yeah, I did not know it was a thing. So I was going to sexual therapy.
Yeah.
And one of the big reasons that I was going to sexual therapy was because... And I only learned this through sexual therapy. It was because there was a disconnection for me when it came to sex and when it came to intimacy.
Yeah.
There was a big disconnection between the physical side and the emotional side.
Mm.
So I struggled to be physical if I was feeling emotional.
Mm.
And I struggled to be emotional if I was being physical.
Mm.
Which, when you're in a relationship, is a super difficult thing to have when it comes to sex. So much so that I would struggle to have sex if I was in a relationship. And so I started going to sexual therapy for that, to try to figure out why I have that disconnect and try and at least like start molding it together. So for me, the whole act of aftercare was never anything that I ever put any thought into, because that was the physical part of our relationship. And that was just me, okay, I'm switching over to something different, going to do that, and then sweet, okay, I'm out of it. I'm going to try come off of the physical mode of relationship that I'm in. And then now that I'm back to emotional, okay, sweet, then I could do it.
Yes.
And if that was a fast transition, that could be like an hour. But it wasn't usually a fast transition, so it's maybe a few hours, might be a day.
Mm.
But when it comes to aftercare and intimacy, that's something that you can't, like, you've just shared this connection. It needs to be something that you close and you bring back with comfort following that.
Totally.
And, you know, you validate the vulnerability that you've just been given.
Yes.
And so for me, that was like a whole thing that I had to learn with my ex, and I really credit her for walking me through that, to be honest.
Amazing.
So, yeah, that was a big one for me to learn.
Wow.
To be honest. And it's something that I'm real conscious of, and I'm still, to be honest, really bad with.
Well, yeah, it's not something we're taught to do, so it is something that needs to be learned.
Yeah, yeah. So that was a really big stepping stone for me.
How incredible.
Yeah.
How amazing that you did that, and that you took the initiative to do that, and that you've been working on it, and
definitely trying to, for sure.
In terms of feeling like you can be physical but not emotional and emotional but not physical.
Yeah.
What's been your biggest learning and tangible advice that you'd have around that?
One of the biggest things that I learned through therapy, because I was going through both standard psychotherapy and I was doing sexual therapy at the same time.
With a different person.
Yeah, a different person. And that was so good for me.
Mm.
I've been seeing psychotherapists on and off since I was maybe like 23.
Yeah.
Which has been really good for me.
Amazing.
Sexual therapy was the first time I ever went to like a specialist for this very specific part of my life. And so what was a constant through all kinds of therapy that I've had is you can pretty much draw everything that you struggle with back to your childhood.
Mm.
And so for me, it was a lot of unpacking that, and unpacking that with people with experience, with people that could receive what I was giving and that had created a space where I really felt like I could do it all authentically. But to be honest, in saying that, I was lucky to have the means to do it.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think the biggest learning that I would say for all of that is, say that's the end of the pipeline for you, is getting to a point where you have a specialist. I'll use an analogy. The idea of going to a PT at the gym is daunting if you are scared to just go on a walk, go on a jog. The idea of even going to the gym, let alone getting a PT, is scary if you can't even go for a walk or a jog. So my thing is, find your walk or a jog. Mm. And so what I started doing was I started talking about just little instances of my childhood and little things, nothing too intense, but just being real open about it with my mates, with my partners. A really big one for me was my podcast. So I started a podcast when I was 21 and 10 people listened to it. But for me, it was the first time I'd vocalized a lot of stuff that I'd held in my head and held in my heart for ages. Mm. But it was the first time I'd actually expressed it and put it out there. That was me learning how to leave the house and walk.
Yeah.
And then talking about all my mates was my jog. And then the end of that pipeline was me being able to go and seek professional advice because I had spent all those years just doing a little bit more and a little bit more. And if I look at it practically, the first time I started talking about it, I was about 21. My first time seeking professional advice, you know, sexual therapy, I was 26. So that's 5 years. So I don't want people to look at the end of my 5-year journey and think, oh shit, that's where I have to start. So no,
yes.
Start as simple as where I did. And so that's, I guess, the big takeaway that I took from my journey to then share to others.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. And for those listening, where did you seek your psychotherapy and where did you seek your sexual therapy?
Just Googled.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In Auckland.
Yeah. So both of mine weren't actually even based in Auckland. So my sexual therapist, she's based in Gisborne.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just Zoom.
Yeah.
And then my psychotherapist was in Auckland, but he was like a little bit up north.
Yeah.
So we'd just do Zooms.
Nice.
2 hours a week. And when I started off, I was just doing bi-weekly. And then there was a period where we were going weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And then it kind of teetered off. It then started doing monthly. And now I just go in and out of waves with it where, yeah, I'll start back. And yeah, I would like to say I would love to do it regularly. But I think if I think about myself realistically,
yeah,
I think I'll always have that relationship with it. Just it'll come in waves.
Yeah.
I'll have moments where I'm doing it heaps and some where I haven't done it for a while. So that's kind of where I'm at with it, yeah.
Amazing. Fucking amazing. I wasn't expecting this.
Appreciate it.
Okay, Joe, we're now moving on to our next segment of the show, which is a part of the show I feel very enthusiastic about. It's called What's in My Box.
What's in my box?
What's in my box?
What's in my box? What's in my box? What's in my box?
If you guess the item correctly, you get to take it home today.
Okay.
If you guess it incorrectly, we're going to send it to your ex-girlfriend.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm with it.
Pop your hands in the box.
I still know her address, so I can...
And have a grab around. See what you can feel. What's your sensory experience?
Okay, what I can feel is I can feel... See, there's like a main structure of it where you slip something in that I feel like I can... Imagine what that's for.
Mm.
But then there's this little bit at the end, like, what's those fish that they go in the deep sea and they have like a light at the end of their head?
Oh.
You know the ones?
Like on Finding Nemo at the very bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, the very,
like,
yeah, yes.
Where there's like the gnarly.
Yeah, that one.
Colourful, yes.
And the lights on Nemo.
That's what you're imagining. Finding Nemo, right?
Well, yeah, I can feel, I can feel half of that fish on the end of this, which is really throwing me off.
Wow.
Because I'm like, oh, I don't know what that part's for.
What could it be?
This is interesting.
It's a true mystery.
Is it a... I don't know. I feel like it's like a cock ring, but with like a bit of flavor on it.
You're really warm.
Yeah. Okay. Is it a... Oh, actually, that's what this is. This is a clit tickle, isn't it?
Oh.
Is it?
We've gone left.
Oh, sorry. My bad. No, like the end bit. That's not a...
Honestly, it could be. It could be used for that, for sure. For sure, actually. That's not that. That's not what that is? You were much warmer with the cock ring.
Wait
with the elaborate cock ring.
It's a cock ring. Does the bottom bit like tickle your ass? It does?
I think so.
Okay, that's... See, because I was holding it the way pointing outwards, but then I turned it this way and I was like, oh, no, that makes sense.
It's got multiple usages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's for tickling. This is... This is the Ass Tickler Cochrane 3000. That's what this is.
It's an Ass Tickler Cochrane 3000. It's a vibrating masturbator is what it is.
Oh, that's why it's so thick too.
You can take it out and have it look if you want.
Oh, wow.
I know. It is quite elaborate.
See, because that, I thought it was like this.
Okay, so I'm confused. I read the instructions in the back, but I think you put your cock.
What did the person say that you bought it off a marketplace?
I'm confused. I think your cock goes in and then that tickles the tip of your cock. And then also,
Really? Or
the other way around, like this could hold your balls and that goes onto your perineum.
Yeah.
That's like holds your balls there, that vibrates, and then that's your perineum there. I think it's a multi... It's a multitasking vibrating masturbator.
Dang.
Anyway, I like what you called it, so you get to keep it. We're not going to send it to your ex-girlfriend.
Thank you. Thank you very much. This is easily one of the best gifts I've ever received. I can't wait to show my parents. Thank you, Stace.
Amazing. Okay,
I love it. Final
question today If you could give your younger self one piece of advice in the realms of sex, love, relating, if you think about 10-year-old Joe stepping into his sexuality, what would you say?
Oh, that's a good question. Oh, you know what I'd say?
What?
Don't watch too much porn. Yeah.
Really nice.
And he'd probably be like, what's porn? I'd be like, well, don't Google it.
I worry, because then,
and that's exactly what's going to get you started on it, brother.
Yeah,
you know, that's a whole convo around how that affects you and the influence that has on you as a young kid. Like, I think I saw my first porn when I was shit. It wouldn't have been much older than that. I reckon like 11 or 12. So, yeah.
That, and how do you reckon that affected your sex life?
Oh, dang, like
massively.
Yeah, massively. Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that it did for me was, you know, when you're introduced to porn at such a young age, so I would have been about 11. Not only did I not have sex till I was 18, I didn't have my first real sexual experience till I was 18.
Yeah.
So that is 7-8 years of...
straight up porn.
Just straight up porn.
Yeah.
Building this relationship with this thing that I think is a certain way.
Mm.
And then I go and do it and it's completely different. For me, and I know this is a really big issue within it, is a lot of guys take their expectation of what it is and then they then translate that to when they are having real sex.
Mm.
And they think that it, you know, that that stuff's appropriate for when you're doing it for real.
Yeah.
I would like to confidently say I don't think I ever had that problem, to be honest. I think I always could tell what was, you know, being played up and what wasn't.
Yeah.
For me, it was more of a thing of coming into having a proper sexually active life as an 18-year-old and struggling to get horny on it. Be turned on because I've had all these years of getting stimulated by all these versions of it, but like the real thing wasn't doing it for me in the way that I had hoped so. And that can really like fuck you up. Yeah. So it did have quite a negative effect on my early sexual life, to be honest. And that was a big thing that came up within sexual therapy. So really undoing that is still something that I'm doing.
Yeah.
It's taken a lot of time to do. And if I was young again, I would just say to my younger self, just don't do it. And I think it's easy to say when you're not a parent, but I know with me, it's something that I'm going to be pretty open about with my kids, the danger of it. And it's something I'm going to be pretty clear about because it's something that I feel like is quite easily avoidable.
Mm.
But we don't avoid it because of how taboo that conversation is for a lot of people.
Yeah, and also because I know for my generation and above, the sex education we were getting at school wasn't at all to do with pleasure or...
Oh, it's abysmal.
So you're like, okay, where am I going to learn about pleasure? Because I'm stabbing in the dark over here. Like, I don't know what to do for my first sexual encounter. No one's ever taught me about it because it's been taboo. So I'm going to go to those avenues to figure it out. And that's just all a facade of what it actually is. So it's like, how do we tell our kids not to watch porn, but also what can we give them
as a tool
to learn about pleasure?
Absolutely.
Finger food.
This is how bad my... Yeah, finger food. Finger food's a great one.
This is it, sweetest.
Finger food. My high school, so I went to an all-boys Presbyterian private rugby school. For our sex ed class, one of our sex ed classes, when I was year 13, so like we should have been learning about this shit.
Yeah.
We watched The Matrix.
Fuck off.
Swear to God.
What, the teacher was just like, can't do it.
Chuck on a movie. We watched The Matrix.
No.
Yeah. I swear to God.
Because it was too uncomfortable for the teacher.
I think it was more just like, I think they didn't want it to be a free period. I think it's required to have sexual education.
Yes.
And so they would just chuck in whatever teacher, I guess, was free. So I think in my year 13, sex ed class, we had like 4 different teachers.
Wow.
And one of my favorite teachers, he was the man. And he's actually a great dude.
Yeah.
But just definitely was not qualified to be teaching sexual education.
Yes.
Chuck on The Matrix. And we just watched that for like 3 or 4 periods of the...
God. That would be secretly real mean.
Yeah. It was mean. We would be like, yo, sex ed was a class. We're like, what have you got to experience? Sex ed. Damn it. What are you guys watching? Harry Potter. That was what we did for our sex ed class.
Oh my God.
I know, it's crazy.
That is crazy.
So that's... And it's so funny because you think, well, not funny. The private boys school, we need to send the best sex ed teachers to those fucking places.
Totally.
But no, that's what we're doing.
Yeah,
watching The Matrix.
Wow, that is enlightening stuff.
Just sending us out there Raw dogging life, literally. Literally.
And it's so crazy to think about the impact that that has been shown the fucking Matrix. At the time, you're thinking that's all good, but actually later in life, you're like, I really needed that.
Yeah, well, because even just that, it becomes the thing that you see. You're like, oh, well, the adults in my life don't even give a shit about it. Why should I?
Why should I? Totally.
I don't need to then. And then you get to my age now, and I'm like, holy fuck. Someone should have let me know. Give me a chance.
I hear you.
But no, thank you so much for having me, Stacey.
Thank
I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for coming on. This has been a joy, honestly. Yeah. Thank you for your vulnerability and your honesty and openness. I appreciate you.
Thank you. And thank you for this ice cream scoop.
There's so many possibilities for that.
No, I'm going to be serving up vanilla ice cream.
Try the vibration function. You've got to hold the left for 3 seconds. Is it on?
Well, that vibrates hard.
Yeah, it goes hard.
Thanks for dining with Finger Food, empowered by Peaches and Cream. If you liked this conversation, you can tip your maitre d' by subscribing, following, downloading, leaving a review, and sharing this podcast with your friends. If you want to work with me one-on-one or listen to more of my podcasts, go to stacyogorman.com or follow us on Instagram at finger.food.podcast. Stay safe, stay sexy. See you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Want to get a chiseled look in the jawline? Sculpt and shape your jawline with added volume from Juvederm Volux XC. Juvederm Volux XC is an injectable gel specifically designed to be robust enough to improve moderate to severe loss of jawline definition. And it is the first and only hyaluronic acid filler approved for the jawline. Add volume to your jawline for a chiseled look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you. Visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.